Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 10th of August. Interesting piece in the current issue of Metal Floss magazine, which actually my son pointed out to me and said, this would make a good talk show, and maybe I think it will. So thanks, Andrew. And it just looks at, and some of them sound outrageous, like living on the moon. I don't know, maybe. Five places to live in the future. Architecture 2050. Brendan Spiegel is our guest. Brendan is the author of this piece, and it looks at an island grown from seawater, a giant pyramid rising out of the water, a city powered by pond scum, the moon. Seriously, the author says, seriously, the moon and skyscraper farms. So we'll talk about each of them, and maybe you have some other ideas of places to live in the future. And we'll welcome your phone calls. We always do that. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, you can do that. And that address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Hi, Brendan.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you very much for being with us. 10 billion people by 2050, so we have to go elsewhere?
Well, it's looking more and more like that. You know, we have all these visions of space-age cities that we've seen in movies for decades now. But if we're really looking at the rate of population, we're actually starting to run out of room. So some of these ideas that architects and scientists have for where we're going to live in the future are looking, you know, a little bit more necessary and realistic.
And you mentioned in your article there are some places in the world that are already running out of room.
Sure. I mean, in this country, we've got some big cities, but it's nothing if you look at the size of cities in places like Japan, South Korea. You know, Japan has 127 million people, and in an area the size of Montana.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so Japan is kind of ground zero for figuring out where to put people. They've got some of the more outrageous proposals we've seen, you know, that aren't being built yet, but people are starting to think, you know, where are we gonna put these people? We're literally running out of room.
Yeah. Well, we may as well start with number two on the list then, this giant pyramid. And you have a picture of what it might look like in the magazine, a giant pyramid rising out of the water.
Sure. Well, you know, as I mentioned, Japan is one of the more crowded countries in the world and also known for its inventiveness. So the architecture firms there periodically release kind of their ideas to get attention for how they're going to build in 10 years, 20 years. And this is one from Shimizu, which is a well-known architecture firm based out of Tokyo. And they looked around Tokyo and said, okay, we've got going on 20 million people. Where are we going to put them? The only place we've got left is Tokyo Bay. So how are we going to build something on top of Tokyo Bay? So they, the folks at Shimizu put together this idea for what they call a mega city pyramid, which is essentially an entire city housed inside a giant pyramid, which would be anchored into the bottom of Tokyo Bay and essentially float on top of the bay and be a model for how we might be able to actually build on top of water. And then their pyramid is about a mile high, and it's got inside of it 12 or so pyramids, each one the size of the pyramids in Egypt. And those would each have skyscrapers hanging in them. And literally, the skyscrapers are kind of hanging from inside the pyramid. So the idea is you've got these skyscrapers. Instead of coming out of the earth, why not, you know, hang them from the sky? Now, of course, this, you know, we're going to need a few technological developments before they could actually do that.
It would be kind of heavy, right? So it has to have new material?
It would be very heavy. So, you know, this is not something they're going to start working on. But in terms of this kind of idea and in building higher and higher, the material scientists are really excited about is something they call carbon nanotubes, which is a material that results from binding carbon together in a different way than it appears naturally, and this material that they call a nanotube binds together in a way that it's stronger than anything that we've seen naturally occurring on Earth. So the next step would be, can scientists figure out a way to bind them together and stack them on top of each other to grow long enough to build a material that would be many times, you know, stronger than concrete?
Mm-hmm.
So if they can figure out how to do that, that's going to be the key, a lot of people think, to building something, you know, a mile high that would make the skyscrapers we have now look not that impressive anymore.
So these architects have built their vision of the future without figuring out how to get there, although they hope that they'll be able to come up with all the technology. Is that the normal way that visionary architects come up with their plans?
Well, I mean, no, not exactly. But we've seen ideas kind of come in pieces. I mean, when people first started talking about skyscrapers, they had this vision of buildings going 50, 100 stories tall, but didn't quite know how that would actually work. And eventually they started working with concrete and steel in a way that could hold up. And today, when you think about the skyscrapers we have, and they're over 100 stories tall, and they literally sway in the wind without falling down, it is a pretty crazy idea. So, you know, is this pyramid going to be exactly what we're going to see in 20 years or 50 years? I don't think anyone really thinks that, but it's the basis for starting to think about how can we get higher and taller and fit more people into the space.
You also say that we don't even have a crane now that could build a mile in the air, so that would have to be invented as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the ideas that they envision for this pyramid is actually not so high-tech after all. It essentially is something that's being used right now to build soccer domes and other large stadiums that they would, instead of bringing in a crane, what architects do is they inflate essentially a giant balloon filled with concrete, and they place the dome on top of the balloon and inflate it up and use that to lift it up instead of bringing in, you know, 50 cranes or so. So if they could figure out a way to do that on a much larger level, then that is the basis for how they're thinking you might be able to build a mile higher into the sky.
Goodness. How would you go out for a walk?
Well, the idea behind this pyramid is that the different buildings in it would be connected by tubes where you would have light rails or trains.
Oh, my goodness. It's a whole city.
Sure. Yeah, it's absolutely. I mean, they're thinking hundreds of thousands of people within one of these pyramids. So you would have transportation to the rest of Tokyo through these tubes. It almost, you know, it looks kind of like something out of the Jetsons, really.
So, would you mind living there, do you think, Brendan?
Well, I mean, at this point, it doesn't sound particularly appealing to live somewhere where you'd be so cut off, right, from the rest of society. And as you say, going out for a walk wouldn't be the same way we think of going out for a walk, although they would have parks and everything inside here. But, you know, it's 50 years ago, people would have said, no way would I live in a city with 10 million other people in a building 50 stories tall. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now, well, at least here in New York, that feels normal. I know a lot of people don't think that's normal yet.
Right. Is there a car alarm going on in the background or what?
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you a little crowded here? Let me go into a different room.
Oh, no. No, it's okay. But is that what it was?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so you are in New York City. Very much.
Constant.
It's okay to have those sounds in the background. Just wanted to identify them. The one that sounds more plausible to me, although maybe this is just as difficult architecturally and with technology, is this idea of growing islands in seawater, because as you suggest, there might be a little bit too much ocean and too little land for all the people, so we might need more land.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, of course, we have already started to build land on top of water. I mean, in Manhattan, you've got significant areas of the island that sand and earth were actually dredged in and filled in what used to be water, and now there's giant buildings on them. Other crowded places like Dubai, they're doing a lot of this building islands essentially on top of water. the problem in terms of the future is that that involves taking Earth and putting it onto water. If we're actually going to run out of land, we're going to need to figure out a way to make more land. And one person who was looking at this for many decades is a German scientist whose name was Wolf Hilberts, and he pioneered a construction method that's called mineral accretion technology. And what he did was basically looked at animals like corals and oysters who build their own homes inside of the sea from minerals that are already there. And he said, well, if they can do that, why can't humans figure out how to do that? And so he pioneered this idea, which essentially harvests the minerals that are already present in seawater, the same way that corals do, to build reefs, and uses them to build a material that's essentially limestone. And what he started doing was building these frames out of wire, submerging them in water, and using electricity, harvest the minerals from seawater around them to build limestone. And so he would essentially build limestone buildings underwater and then rising up out of the water. Working with his partners, he rebuilt some reefs all over the world and even built small islands.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so he actually passed away a few years ago, but he was hoping that eventually you'd be able to use this technology to build an entire
sure.
island with buildings and everything just rising out of the sea. And the material they're building is actually stronger than concrete and other materials we use today. So it's, you know, not something that we're able to do on that large a scale yet, but it's maybe not so far-fetched.
Hmm. Is somebody carrying on with his work?
Yes, there's no one at this point who's really wants to take it to that next level of building a whole city in the sea as he once envisioned. But there is a group of scientists working with the material, which they now call BioRock, to rebuild reefs, which have been destroyed all over the world, to kind of build habitats for animals. They're doing this in the Indian Ocean, in Australia, in Jamaica. And then there's a lot of groups who hope to take that to the next level. There's several groups of people who have contacted Hilberts and his former partners about, you know, can we actually do this and build an island? You know, libertarian groups and other people who want to just not live in any of these countries we've got going on now and build their own place. So, of course, money is a big dilemma, and who would ever be able to put up the money to invest
right.
in something
like that? And where is the most likely place for them to be built?
Well, Hilberts had at one point hoped to go out on this sea mountain, which is off the coast of Portugal in international waters, and look to him to be the best place because you could actually wrap one of these giant wire frames around the underwater mountain and build up from there, and it would be solidly anchored in. The dilemma, of course, is, you know, he's doing this with electricity, so how do you get that much energy? You can't just have an extension cord come out from land and bring out that much energy, so wherever it's going to be, the biggest dilemma is how do you make this much energy? Is it going to be from wave power or wind power or whatever we develop? But that's kind of, in that scenario, that's what's yet to be determined.
We'll start taking phone calls for Brendan. We have yet to talk about some of the other architectural possible wonders and ways for us to leave Earth, build more space for us, because the population is going to increase pretty significantly by the year 2050. Five Paces to Live in the Future, Architecture 2050 in Mental Floss magazine, if you want to look at a picture of some of these possibilities. Our number is 800-486-8655. We've already talked about a giant pyramid rising out of the water in Japan, where they are running out of room, and also perhaps turning seawater into land, which was the desire of a German architect and marine scientist who developed a technology to do that. And it was a lifelong dream to see these islands, and I guess there are a couple of them, being built. We have yet to talk about a city powered by pond scum. And also we'll be looking at skyscraper farms, which may be more of a reality. And then, I don't know about this one. Maybe our guest doesn't exactly either. The fifth suggestion is the moon. Seriously, because this planet, meaning Earth, will go to pot sooner or later. To your calls in a moment, 800-486-8655. Maybe you have some other schemes of where we're likely to go, and we'd like to hear from you about that. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to phone calls now for Brendan. Brendan's article in the issue, current issue of Mental Floss magazine. Brendan Spiegel is the author of the piece. And we start our calls with Chris from La Crosse. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I know we haven't exactly gotten into talking about space yet or whatever, but I was wondering if Brendan, in any of his research, had encountered anything. I can't remember if it was Arthur C. Clarke or Isaac Asimov, but his idea was to have a giant, basically giant elevator going up past the atmosphere. And I was wondering if there's been any progress on those kinds of ideas. And then my second thing is just kind of wondering what kind of ideas there are for producing food in space.
Mm. Well, I can definitely speak to that. The first question about Asimov's space elevators, which is something science fiction fans have been hoping for a long time, this idea of being able to basically send people directly up and then have kind of a colony in outer space. And there's been progress on that in terms of people are still thinking about it and coming up with a way to do it. I don't know if it's something that we're ready to do. Again, when I was talking about Shimizu Megacity Pyramid, they essentially think they can do it if someone can invent those carbon nanotubes that can make it strong enough to do. And that's those kind of magic technology that everyone's excited about is the same thing that people who have drawn up these designs for space elevators are hoping that scientists can bond together these carbon nanotubes well enough to support something of that structure. So are space elevators something we're going to see really soon? I don't know about that, but it is something that people are still thinking about, and, you know, of course we've seen hundreds and thousands of ideas for how we're going to eventually live in outer space, and it's certainly something that in the next couple decades you're going to see people actually drawing up more realistic plans.
Thank you so much for your call, Chris. Feel free to join us, 800-486-8655. And while we're talking about space, number five on your list is the moon. Seriously? Really, seriously?
Well, actually pretty seriously. Maybe not for all of us, but NASA is currently hoping to go back to the moon by the year 2020, is their target date. I don't know if that'll be before or after we get that healthcare reform figured out. But, you know, it's in the future, but not too far. So, and this time, the next mission that NASA sends to the moon, they're planning on having astronauts stay there and building a permanent structure. So what they're currently trying to figure out right now is what kind of a habitat could they build on the moon for people to survive there on a permanent basis. And the problem, of course, with the moon is that you'd have to get something there. We don't have technology yet to construct anything once we get there. So NASA wants to build a habitat that, you know, is lightweight and durable enough to transport to the moon. Actually, over the last year, they've had a group of astronauts testing out a habitat in Antarctica.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's fascinating.
Yeah, and this is kind of their first idea. Well, first possible workable idea. It's kind of a giant inflatable igloo almost. It really looks kind of like what we call a moon bounce, you know, that you see at children's birthday parties. So ironically, that might be the kind of place they end up living on the moon, one of these inflatable balloon-type surfaces that would, of course, be heated and pressurized and they'd make it collapsible enough to bring up in a rocket. So they're testing that out right now in Antarctica because that's the most moon-like place on Earth. And apparently, from what I've heard, they're thinking that's something that might be workable. But they're still taking ideas. So if you've got an idea for how we could build something that could be brought to the moon and and astronauts could live in it there, you should definitely get in touch with NASA.
I guess you should. Now, there's talk about not being able to go for a walk. What the heck would you do on the moon all day?
I don't know about that. I mean, I think that if we actually got to the point where they were sending civilians to live on the moon, they would probably hope to be able to construct something there where, as we talked about in the pyramid before, you would have an entirely self-contained city. So I don't know that that anyone envisions us actually being able to have the technology to walk around on the moon or Mars or wherever it is that we hope to eventually send people, but maybe we'd build an entire indoors city, and that would be where people would live if we do run out of room in 50 or 100 years.
Right. It's hard to believe. Maybe there are two camps of people here. We were talking about the 40th anniversary of the moon landing on the 40th anniversary of the moon landing, and our guest was discussing living on the moon eventually because we wouldn't be able to live on Earth anymore. And my thought was, well, that's it then. That's it for human beings. And
right.
His thought was definitely, oh, no, it would be wonderful to be able to live on other planets. It's what we're meant to do. I wonder if we would fall into those camps if we've had it with this Earth. I think skip it. Other people think, no, go live somewhere else.
Sure. I think you're right. There are certainly people who would never consider it and whenever this is, but there's definitely people ready to go. I mean, if you look right now, Virgin Galactic from Richard Branson's Virgin America company is going to start sending tourists to the outer layer of the Earth's atmosphere in essentially rocket ships next year. So there are certainly humans who are we're ready to get up there in outer space, and we have that survival instinct. So if Earth really got to the point where it wasn't habitable, I think there's a lot of humans who would be ready to go wherever we could.
Well, it would make a fascinating article. Are you going to take one of those rockets?
I would love to.
Would you?
I don't know if the magazine is going to put up the $500,000,
yeah,
whatever
right.
it is, for me to
probably
go.
Not.
So maybe we can start a fun drive.
Let's go to Dave from Green Bay. Hi, Dave.
Hi. You know, as far-fetched as it may seem, actually there are places already on the moon that could provide shelter for us there. On the moon, we have 1/6 gravity on Earth, and in the past, you know, there was a lot of volcanism on the moon, and the maria, you know, the lunar plains, which were produced by giant volcanic extrusions from the interior of the moon, produced rivers of lava, and those rivers basically started to freeze on the surface, and then underneath the lava came out, and so that there are underground lava tubes. And on Earth, we have lava tubes in places like Iceland and Hawaii, where the lava, you know, you can, and these are like maybe 30 or 40 feet in diameter. But because of the lower gravity on the moon, these things can be like 1,000 feet in diameter. So we already have sheltered space in the lava tubes under the surface of the moon that potentially could provide a basic place from which to build pressurized habitation. The other issue that your guest raised was, what are we going to do there on the moon? And the moon is a source of minerals. It's basically made of the same stuff that the Earth is. So we have the basic engineering metals of aluminum and titanium and magnesium and iron. And we can build useful things like solar power satellites because we need clean energy on Earth. So it may be that the way we will save the Earth is to be able to use space resources to provide clean energy. And there's an enormous market here on Earth for clean energy. We need to get away from fossil fuels. And so, you know, building an Earth-Moon economy, using the resources of the moon materially and also the free energy coming from our fusion reactor in the sky, and we have our sun, that can address some of the major environmental issues. So the reason to go to the moon is to get clean energy, and we actually have lava tubes in places that could help us to, that are already there. If you just build something on the surface, the radiation coming from the sun would basically cook you and cause genetic damage. So everything that occurs there has to be sheltered, and there's no atmosphere on the moon. So we need to use rock to protect us from the solar radiation and cosmic radiation. But there are some solutions. People have looked at this for decades now since the Apollo missions, and we've learned a tremendous amount about what we can do on the moon and why this makes sense, for the problems that we're facing on Earth.
Yeah, fascinating. Brendan?
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. And one thing that it reminds me of is how many different people and different groups there are who have ideas in the works for what we can do on the moon or even elsewhere in the solar system. I mentioned NASA is currently testing out what kind of habitats they can use, but there's tons of other groups as well. There's a group called the Mars Society, which has advocated for a long time for essentially colonizing Mars and the moon, and they're also out in the desert in the American West testing habitats that they would hope to reconstruct on the moon. So the caller brings up a very interesting idea of using what's already there rather than bringing our own materials out there, which, you know, in a way makes a lot more sense. So, you know, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, not only what we're doing up there, but how it works with all the different people who want to go there. You know, as I said, you know, have private companies taking people up essentially into outer space, you know, not really to the moon and what we think of as outer space, but getting closer. So in 50 or 100 years, are there going to be private groups in different countries and different corporations trying to build their own outposts elsewhere in the solar system? It's not such a far-fetched idea.
Thanks, Dave, very much for your call. Frank is next from Madison. Hi, Frank.
Hi.
Hi.
Did you have a good holiday?
Yeah, thank you. I was no TV, no radio, and not many newspapers.
Your soul is refreshed, I'm
yes,
sure.
Exactly.
You have a fascinating guest, and I have a contrarian's question, which is that our civilization has a resource footprint that's larger than the planet we already have.
Mm-hmm.
And might it be better to speculate how we would be living on this planet as it is and reduce our footprint? Look for much more energy efficient industrial economy, cities that draw fewer resources and are less energy intensive, and then there's an even darker question, which is, can we count on being able to grow as a population? You know, there's the traditional four horsemen of the apocalypse, disease and famine.
Yeah.
So maybe we're looking at far different problems than finding another place to go. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Frank.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree with Frank that it probably makes sense before we start looking at the moon to start, you know, are there ways we can save our own planet and build habitats when we do use up all these fossil fuels that we've been surviving on. And one of the ideas we looked at in the piece, which I don't think we covered yet, is the idea of a city powered by pond scum,
mm-hmm.
And essentially algae. This idea comes from a San Francisco-based architecture firm called Iwamoto, and the History Channel recently ran a competition called Cities of the Future, where they invited several prominent architecture firms to come up with ideas for what a city would look like 100 years from now when we run out of fossil fuels and we need a different way to power these cities. And their idea is a city that runs on power harvested from algae. And the Department of Energy is currently financing studies that look at generating hydrogen from algae ponds. And, you know, something algae produces hydrogen naturally, and scientists have been able to speed that process up. And this idea hopes that we could have a city essentially surrounded by ponds where algae is being grown, and that hydrogen is harvested from that, and that supplies all the energy, which could then be sent around the city, and you're not having to use natural gas or coal or anything like that anymore. So I do think that that's the next step in terms of of really thinking about where we're going to live in the future is how are these places going to be powered, whatever they look like. And it's certainly going to be interesting to see what becomes a reality.
And you write about these carbon nanotubes, which resurface here. They were also a part of the design in the island thing, weren't they?
Yes, absolutely. These carbon nanotubes are kind of the great hope for scientists in terms of building more futuristic habitats. And because in this idea where you're using hydrogen to power a city, the question is, well, how would it be transferred around the city? You know, you can't just keep a giant bubble of hydrogen under a city. Of course, hydrogen is explosive. But it turns out that when people have looked at these carbon tubes, one of the other great things about them is that they can store hydrogen molecules, theoretically, and carbon absorbs hydrogen in a way that breaks up the molecules into separate atoms so that they wouldn't be explosive anymore. So the idea that Iwamoto and also some other scientists have had is you could use these tubes to store and transfer hydrogen, and maybe that's the solution to having hydrogen power and to having it be safe.
We have lines open if you've been trying to get through. It's been busy, but they're open now at 800-486-8655. Our next caller is Mike from Appleton. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, hi. I think the view that you have to take on this is, you know, not the next 50 years, but probably the next 500 years. And I think no matter how you slice it or dice it, eventually the resources on this planet are going to run out because it's, you know, because resources are finite. So the human species, yeah, I think we're destined, it's inevitable, we're destined to explore and expand. The moon and Mars are probably just very small stepping stones as we move further and further out into outer space.
And would you be willing to go?
Absolutely.
Really?
Hell yeah.
Well, there you have the answer to, are people going to be willing to go?
I guess some of them are, yeah. You want to respond to his comments, Brendan?
I think it's right that we're absolutely thinking, you know, further and further out. And, you know, all of this, of course, sounds far-fetched, but just think about 500 years ago, you know, someone thinking about the idea of New York City today. How far-fetched did that sound? So the idea of living in a bubble on the moon compared to that doesn't really sound so crazy. You know, the truth is we don't know exactly what the modern city or the modern planet or the moon is going to look like in 50 years, 100 years, 500 years. But history tells us that it's going to be an awful lot different than it is today.
Yeah. The other one we haven't talked about, which seems to me to be the most likely and feasible, tell me if that's correct, are these skyscraper farms?
Yeah, this is an idea that actually is maybe not so far-fetched, at least on the basic level. It's been pioneered by a professor at Columbia University called Dirk Disbomier, and he's looking at the idea of growing farms inside of cities. And this has kind of become very trendy because of the whole locavore movement and the idea that people want to eat produce and food that's grown near them rather than transferring it across the country. And the idea is take a skyscraper, take one of these 30-story buildings, and turn that into a farm. Instead of having, you know, all the farms out in, say, Wisconsin and the food being sent to New York and no food growing there,
sure,
why can't you grow the food inside a 30-story skyscraper? Maybe have people living there, too. And there have been a lot of different designs recently for how these could work. There's a company called Valcent, which has patented some technology that actually rotates plants and sets them up in a way that they could be grown on top of each other and theoretically going, you know, as tall as a building and having an entire building lined with plants. And that would be how you would grow the food to feed a city. Let's say, you know, put up 10 or 20 of those in New York City, and now you've got enough food.
That's great.
To feed everybody. So that's something that, you know, I don't think we're going to see a 50-story farm in New York next year, but you might, you know, we're now starting to see people grow these urban farms. There's some of these places in Brooklyn where people are growing farms on their roofs now, and they have whole crops that are being sold around the city, and maybe we'll start seeing a 5-story farm where people are actually a whole building devoted to growing produce. And that's something that I think is actually very realistic.
Sure. It does make a lot of sense, doesn't it, Brendan?
It does. And I mean, it's not something that we quite have the technology to ever do, but we do spend a lot of energy getting food across the country and across the world. So if we are going to be living increasingly in these hyper-populated urban areas, it seems to make sense to have our food source there as well.
More phone calls in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. Five places to live in the future, Architecture 2050 in Mental Floss magazine. And the author of the piece, Brendan Spiegel, is our guest this hour. We have one line open. If you'd like to grab it, please do so. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And our next caller is Jason from La Crosse. Hi, Jason.
Hi.
Hi.
I actually just had a question about, we keep talking about the building and expanding up and out. Why aren't we talking more about the down and in? And based upon all these scenarios of our population growth, why aren't we talking more about population control? Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
I think that's a really great point Jason brings up. I mean, it's population experts around the world have actually sounded the alarm about this. You know, we're talking 10 million people by 2050, really an unknown amount of people in the next 100 years, and yet we still have countries that are feel they're underpopulated or and are encouraging population growth in the present. So I think that undoubtedly the way that kind of global warming has really come to our attention in the last 5 years and we realize that we have to do something about it, we're going to realize in the next 10 years, 20 years, that we have to do something about population. We just can't keep expanding at the current rate, even if we do build some of these gigantic structures. Even if we do go to the moon, we're going to run out of space for people, and we can't just keep going farther and farther. And I do think that the idea of population control is something that people will realize in the very near future that we need to take seriously.
Dick from Waukesha. Hi, Dick.
Hi.
Hi.
Kathleen and guest, can you walk us through this algae cycle? And everything else seems to run out. We don't have an unlimited supply of minerals and liquid and solid. We don't have, wood reproduces itself, but can you do that?
Sure.
Beginning to the end, does it recycle or what?
Sure. Well, I mean, this is, of course, only one of the many ideas for how we can produce energy when we do run out of fossil fuels. But the idea essentially behind algae is that algae naturally produces hydrogen through photosynthesis and in very small quantities. But microbiologists have basically created mutant versions of algae plants that produce hydrogen much more rapidly. I don't know exactly what they do to make that happen, but the idea is that if they could reproduce those on a vast scale, we would be making enough hydrogen that, you know, hydrogen, if we have enough of it and we can contain it safely, can power cars, can power buildings, essentially do everything that our electricity today does. In Iceland today, they already run their cars on hydrogen power. So it's not something that is so far-fetched or futuristic.
Does it take a lot of energy to produce all the algae?
It certainly does.
And maintain them?
Yeah, I mean, this is not something that people have been able to do on a large scale yet.
Yeah.
But if they are able to reproduce algae, these kind of mutant versions of algae, to the point where they could produce enough hydrogen, the idea is they would be self-sustaining, and we wouldn't have to be using other energy to make them run.
It's kind of fun to contemplate all that, but I agree with the other fellow, with population. I was, instead of growing more things and buildings and so on, why not stop growing people?
Yeah, absolutely.
Instead of killing them, growing them, and then killing them.
Yeah. Thank
that
you.
Happy note.
On that, yeah. Have a lovely summer day, Dick. Well, we still have them. Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks very much for the call. Our number is 800-486-8655. You had to narrow this down to five for the article. Were there literally hundreds of ideas to choose from, Brendan?
Oh, sure. I mean, everyone's got an idea, right?
Right.
So, Yeah, I mean, I thought actually what one of the other callers was going to say is how come we're not looking downward? That's
yes.
another idea. People are saying, why can't we, you know, start building cities underground?
Right.
And even in terms of stuff that's actually happening, there are these mile-high towers that are going to start being constructed in places like Dubai and the United Arab Emirates are actually building now buildings that are just dwarf what we've already seen. Slowing now that, you know, we're all kind of running out of money now, the things that are actually happening are slowing down. But in terms of the realistic and the more far-fetched, you know, everyone's got an idea for where we're going to live in the future, and it's hard to say what's really going to happen.
Right. And in the Earth, are there a lot of architects looking at, you know, digging into the Earth?
I don't think that it's something that's taken as seriously just because it's, I'd say, so unappealing to live underground. But actually, in this idea that we were talking about for a city grown from algae and pond scum using hydrogen power, the idea would have to be that it would be transferred underneath the earth and that you'd build a huge network of tubes to send the power around the city, much in the way that in cities now today we have underground transportation and we have power sent around underground. But there have been a lot of people who looked at expanding that and saying, can we put all our power underground? Can we put all our transportation underground? Maybe in the future we're going to have some of these carbon nanotubes made from hydropower that are going to send cars around under the city underground and transport people that way so that we have enough room overground for people to live.
Let's go to Vince next from Racine. Hi, Vince.
Hi there, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have a comment that your guest made about the dangers of hydrogen, but I think that we must remember that hydrogen is really not flammable or explosive as long as you keep it away from oxygen or some other oxidant material. So in some of these outer, quote-unquote, outer space locations, hydrogen will not contact oxygen, at least under uncontrolled situations. And so that's a little bit of good news because it isn't, but on its own accord, highly flammable and explosive.
Sure, and that might, that brings up maybe we'll combine some of these ideas and harvest the hydrogen power in another environment, maybe on the moon, as one of the previous callers was saying. It might be easier to harvest some of these alternative energies in another environment eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and just following up on that, also there's a concept of producing it as it is needed by some mechanism as opposed to storing it in large vessels. So that's my comment, and a very interesting program, and appreciate you taking my call.
Yes, thanks very much. I think you need to sign up with a pond scum project in San Francisco. What do you think, Vince? There is work that awaits you. Did you want to comment on part of that, Brendan?
Sure. I mean, I think that the idea of whether or not hydrogen is flammable, or at least in this situation, they were wondering about how we're going to actually send it around, because that's one thing that we talk about developing alternative energy, whether it's hydrogen or wind or wave power or geothermal power. It's only part of the problem. The other part of the problem is how are we actually going to transport it as cities grow bigger and bigger and habitats grow bigger and bigger. We've got to find a way to not only harvest this alternative energy, but how do we transfer it from one place to another? And that's just a whole other problem that there's a whole other set of ideas, and we don't really know how we're going to do that.
Yeah. Thanks, Vince. Here's an email from Larry from Madison. Sorry to rain on everybody's parade, but I don't have too much hope for these ideas. First of all, they'd be prime targets for terrorists. We'll probably still be fighting that war. Also, we have to deal with disease, famine, and asteroids and other space junk. This, in turn, will reduce the world's population. We can't even agree on health care, so I can't imagine living on the moon.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, that's kind of a pessimistic but maybe a realistic way to say we're not going to run out of space because we have enough problems and maybe we're not even going to survive ourselves. And disease, of course, is the a serious concern in terms of whatever you're building. You know, when we talk about these skyscraper farms, which is the most realistic idea we've talked about, the one thing that could be a huge flaw is what happens if there's a disease outbreak.
Oh, right.
And takes out the entire structure. Then, you know, you've got a whole city that has instantly lost its entire food source. So that's something that I don't believe people have quite conceptualized yet, how we would protect against biological threats such as that, which, you know, as we know from flu scares and everything, is only getting more serious.
Mm-hmm.
As population expands.
Bill is next. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Yeah, I was going to suggest instead of this carbon cap and trade, we should have the power plants build huge greenhouses next to their plants, exhaust their carbon dioxide into these greenhouses and raise algae, capture the hydrogen, and use that to power the plants. And not only that, they could dry the algae and burn it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that would be kind of the next step, is could we make all of these places self-sufficient? Again, if we're building these skyscraper farms, could we figure out a way to harvest energy from plants that we're incorporating into that so that we're not even using fossil fuels to build them? I think that's definitely the next step in figuring out if that's possible or not.
Thanks, Bill. Connie is next. Hi, Connie.
Yes, hi. I just had a comment as far as the population, and I do believe we really don't have to worry about it because, well, for one thing, the swine flu, and there's going to be other pandemics. Someone else had mentioned the different diseases and stuff, and that's largely in part to the overuse of antibiotics over the many different years, as well as, you know, our atmosphere and just the way we live. We're going to be, you know, thinning our population out without having to even really do it. It's just going to happen. So I don't think we have to worry about that. I think the skyscraper farms are an awesome idea, but that should be more, you know, more looked into, because a lot of we could do so much more if we cut down on our meat consumption, because our cows eat all the grains and the other animals. And then, you know, they convert it to meat, obviously. And if we just way cut down on our meat consumption and eat more grains, our food would go so much further.
All right, Brendan.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the other far-fetched ideas, or maybe not so far-fetched, that some of the people who've proposed these skyscraper farms is, can we also produce meat inside of these farms? Maybe even producing meat synthetically. PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, recently announced a competition with a $1 million prize to see if any scientists can actually develop a meat and meat tissue that's actually grown inside of a laboratory instead of using animals. And so I've also seen a couple of proposals where you might have these urban farms, skyscrapers in cities, where they wouldn't have livestock, but they would be producing something similar to meat, which is what we would eat, but it would come from a lab instead of from animals. So that, I don't know if Connie would be so excited about eating that instead of meat, but there are a whole host of ways that people are looking at to think about how we'll eat in
right.
the future.
Thanks, Connie. One more phone call, one more minute. George from Cable. Hi, George.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because I read a book probably 20 years ago, a sci-fi book, and the theme was this man had genetically engineered plants so they would grow into structures, basically.
Huh.
And I thought it was very interesting, and I think about it probably once every couple months to this day, and you know, it's far-fetched, but maybe that something like that could work someday.
Sure, I haven't actually seen anything about that. That's going to have to be the next thing I look up. Can we build a building from plants? You know, and
a living. It was a living structure, alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
continuously growing and
right,
amazing
right.
plants.
What was the name of the book?
I think it was called Hoppenfeld's Revenge. I can't even remember the author, but
it's good you can remember the title. I'm impressed.
I know. I'm amazed myself. But.
All right, thanks George. Yeah, thanks very much for the call. Brendan, thank you for the hour and the really interesting ideas. It was it captivated our attention, and I appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, Kelpie.
Thanks, Brendan. Brendan Spiegel, Five Places to Live in the Future, Architecture 2050 in the current issue of Mental Floss magazine, and we thank him for his time and for thinking of we're living up to our name, the Ideas Network, this hour. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour and to Rachel Biblow for on-air production in our studios in Milwaukee. And thanks, everybody, for all of your interesting calls. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 9 o'clock. News is coming up and many great hours of conversation ahead on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.